As promised, during Rural News, it's time to get into the nitty-gritty of the federal budget and what it means for regional Australia. A national rural reporter based at Parliament House, Kath Sullivan, is here to help me with that. Thank you very much, Kath.
A pleasure, Clint.
There was a focus on regional Australia generally in the budget. Billions of dollars have been allocated to, quote, turbocharge regional Australia, in the words of the Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce. What are some of the specific areas the government is focusing on there?
Well, there's, I think, more than $20 billion that's been set aside for the regions as part of this turbocharge in the federal budget this week. And one area that really caught my interest was a brand new $7.1 billion Energy Security and Regional Development Plan. Now, this is a $7 billion kitty to be overseen by the Infrastructure Minister at the moment, that's Mr. Joyce, and it's going to spend money in four different regions. Now, get this, Clint, it's the WA Pilbara, the Northern Territory, North and Central Queensland, and in New South Wales, the Hunter region. These are all areas that have been sort of identified as seats that will be hotly contested by the coalition, or the coalition certainly got its eyes on as we head into the federal election period. And this money is to help basically develop the local economy in those areas, help build infrastructure that will also have a regional development flow-on effect. And the funding will work by being met in joint funding arrangements with either the state or territory governments or with private partnership.
There's also another $2 billion pool of cash called the Regional Accelerator Program as well. How is that different?
Bit of a theme running here, isn't there? This $2 million, it's all going to go into existing schemes or funds or kitties that the government's used in the past and says works well. And this $2 billion will go to things like regional education facilities and I think there's about $500 million to be set aside for local manufacturing. So, again, a lot of money there headed towards the regions.
And is the flavour of all of that recognising that you can't kind of tell people to go out and move to the bush without having the services there to facilitate that movement of people?
Well, that's been some really interesting feedback that we've heard from some of these communities that look set to benefit from these new funding arrangements. I should point out too that $7 billion fund, that's actually over 11 years. And we've seen with things like the Northern Australia Infrastructure Fund, or NAIF as it's known, and the National Water Grid Authority, which also has billions of dollars for dams, they're big figures, but often it takes a long time to actually see these projects realised. And one of the things that we heard from some of the communities that have been targeted this week is that it's great to be putting money into roads and rail and ports, but what about the community infrastructure, things like childcare facilities and ensuring that there's enough services to support the community that's already there and those communities that are growing?
Indeed. And on the farm, we heard earlier in Country Breakfast from the National Farmers Federation CEO Tony Maher expressing disappointment about spending on biosecurity programs. How did the government react to that?
Well, the minister said the NFF was ignorant.
Pretty strong words.
Look, I thought it was really interesting. The National Farmers Federation for years has been calling for more biosecurity funding, and you can understand why, right? There's so many pests and diseases that could really undermine our exports and indeed our domestic agricultural output. If you cast your mind back a few years, Clint, the Agriculture Minister David Littleproud, when he was first in the gig, actually used a federal budget to announce a levy on shipping and freight containers. Now, the whole idea was that if you charge, I think, something like $10 per shipping container, you'll build up a nice kitty and you'll have a sustainable way of funding biosecurity services. But basically, the cement industry, the Minerals Council, they thought this was a rubbish idea. They didn't like it at all. And eventually, the minister axed the levy. Ever since then, farmers have been saying, hey, we need a sustainable funding model. And so it was sort of not a surprise that Tony Maher from the NFF was a bit disappointed that the federal government, I think, is $15 million in this next year to beat lumpy skin disease, which listeners of the program might be familiar with. It sounds nasty. It looks awful. And it could really shut down Australia's red meat exports as well as dairy exports too if it was ever to come into Australia. And that's a realistic possibility given that it's been detected in Sumatra. But David Littleproud, the agriculture minister, said, hold on a minute, will your horses? We've spent hundreds of millions on biosecurity in the budgets leading up to this week. This budget, in fact, has about $60 million over 4 years for biosecurity services. And, you know, when it comes to lumpy skin disease, we're spending $15 million next year. It's not even in the country. I think he might have even suggested that the NFF were sideline critics that should really leave the debate to the scientists.
Well, as we heard earlier in the show, it could blow into the country at any section. And I guess the flavour of what the NFF is saying is we don't want to rely on the minister of the day to splash some cash on biosecurity. We want that stable long-term funding.
And the risks are really significant. So you can understand, especially when Australian farmers are so export orientated, their concerns about ensuring that we can keep the national herd safe.
Well, overall, Kath, there's $600 million aimed at the farming sector. We already knew ahead of the budget about the tax relief for farmers participating in carbon storage projects. But were there any other major programs or new programs in the budget looking at farming?
$600 million for agriculture this year, including those tax breaks for carbon farming. Probably the biggest ticket is for trade investment. And this is actually set aside, I think it's $270 million over the forward estimates, which is there to help streamline the export process for Australian farmers and help them get their product overseas as effortlessly as possible. I think that will certainly be welcomed. But really, when we look at the major agriculture groups, their hot take on this year's budget was that it was pretty steady and pretty stable.
To another important area in the ag portfolio, what was in the budget in terms of Murray-Darling Basin?
Well, I know that you do take a keen interest in what's happening across the basin. Much of the funding we already knew about had been announced before Tuesday night's federal budget. But one thing that did stick out was $2.6 million, not a lot in the $13 billion scheme of things when it comes to the Murray-Darling Basin. But this is for a new study of the infrastructure across the southern part of the basin. We haven't had an opportunity to hear from the Water Minister, Keith Pitt, about how that money will actually be spent, what kind of infrastructure the government wants to look at and why it's actually doing this audit. But I think that will be one that we'll have to keep an eye on.
The people of the basin are no stranger to a study or an audit, are they?
It just wouldn't be a federal budget without some sort of study or funding announcement for a look at the basin. Anyway, we're getting to the crunch time. You know, the Murray-Darling Basin plan water savings targets are due to be hit in just a couple of years. So I think it's going to be an interesting space.
Absolutely. Kath Sullivan is the National Rural Reporter for the ABC based at Parliament House. Thank you so much, Kath.
Enjoy your weekend, Clint.
And we're about to hear about another story that's been keeping Kath busy this week. Farm workers from Vietnam will be the first to be employed on Australian farms under the federal government's agriculture visa. The government announced it had reached an agreement with Vietnam late on Monday, but so far it's not clear when the workers will arrive, how many workers are likely to be employed through the visa, or if they'll be skilled or unskilled. National's deputy leader David Littleproud says the agreement is a big win for his party, which at times struggled to convince its Liberal colleagues of the need for such a visa.
We never gave up. The National Party never gave up. This has been an article of faith for the National Party, and we've delivered it. It's taken a little longer than we would have liked, but we never gave up, and we made sure that we prosecuted the case that these jobs are tested with Australians first. They always get first crack at them. But if we can't fill them, then farmers need to have a secure supply. This is the biggest structural change. It won't just be transient people coming through. We're looking to give a pathway to permanent residency at some point, and Vietnam will hopefully be the first of other countries that will also sign up.
Okay, let's go to the Memorandum of Understanding, which your colleague Maurice Payne has announced that Australia has signed with Vietnam. Why don't we know how many workers will actually arrive from Vietnam? or when they will arrive, or whether they'll be skilled or unskilled?
Well, a lot of that legwork has been done. So we now move to the implementation phase, whereby we have approved employers and labour hire companies that are ready to act. Now, what that then moves to is a point where those contracts are signed between DFAT and those approved employers, and we bring those people in on the basis of effectively, as we said to start with, is ramping this up. There is no actual cap on these programs. It's market driven. Obviously, we still have the Pacific schemes available to Australian farmers at the moment, and that's being used. So this is a complementary and supplementary program, and farmers will make that determination, but this gives them another string to the bow in being able to provide secure labour when Australians won't take this work.
How many workers from Vietnam do you expect will come and work on Australian farms in the next 18 months?
Yeah, so we'll ramp into this implementation phase. The program was designed to ramp up from small numbers and early thousands and then to work on a demand-driven process.
Well, we actually heard from one DFAT official say that numbers could be capped at 1,000.
There are no caps. There are no caps on this program. The ag visa that has been put in place has no caps on it. It's a demand-driven process. What the DFAT official was talking about is those initial stages in terms of the implementation. That's what we've worked through now, and we've already done a lot of that legwork in making sure that we've got those approved employers and labour hire companies that we'll trial this with. So that can commence, there can be contracts signed, and the implementation process can now begin.
How extensive do you think the worker shortage is on Australian farms at the moment? What's your latest intel?
Look, the last numbers from ABARES was around 20,000. And now the Pacific scheme, we brought in a bit over 12,000, 13,000, the last tally I saw. We're trying to bring as many of those in. But obviously, we're looking for different skill sets. And while this first tranche will probably be unskilled or semi-skilled, we are looking across the sector in terms of a shortage, not just in picking fruit, but also in the agriculture sector, whether that be in forestry, fisheries, meat processing. So there's a range of roles that need to be filled, and this is where we're trying to get a solution. And you've got to understand that 20,000 is just really in horticulture alone.
And at one stage you were talking about bringing in header drivers from Canada or the Northern Americas. No one's really been talking about whether there's bilateral negotiations on the ag visa with those countries. Is that off the table?
No. So the Australian Border Force Commissioner has been given the power since COVID came in to be able to give visa approvals for those skills that are in shortage in Australia. Now, all it takes is for someone, I know CBH in WA did have approval for this previously and then it lapsed. So all it takes is if there's specific skill shortages for those industries to ask for them to be put on the skill shortage list, and then the Australian Border Force Commissioner has the authority to approve visas for those people to come into Australia and work as it stands at the moment.
And just to be clear, if I'm an Australian farmer and I need somebody to pick fruit on my farm, I've gone to the local jobs market, can't get anybody recruited, do I then go to the Palm? And if I can't get anybody from the Pacific to work on my farm, that's when I can engage on the agriculture
visa? All choice, and it's all choice about what you see as the right requirement for your property, and that's what it's about. Obviously, we think that the Pacific scheme has primacy because it has some tenure already, but what we're saying is this is a complementary and supplementary measure that will support the shortage and look to also not just unskilled workers, but skilled and semi-skilled as well. So it goes beyond what the Pacific scheme is, and you've got to understand the Pacific scheme also goes beyond agriculture. This is just limiting it to agriculture industry. So what we're saying is we need to make sure that we have a robust system that is diverse and gives farmers choice.
Agriculture Minister David Littleproud speaking with Kath Sullivans. In a statement, Labor's Shadow Minister Julie Collins called on the government to come clean on the details of the MOU and when workers are expected on farms. Vietnamese migrant in Australia's horticultural heartland thinks the signing of the new ag deal with his homeland is, quote, awesome. Vietnamese migrant Jack Dang works at the Robin Vale Network House, a local community organisation for education and training in stone fruit and table grape growing, and he has welcomed the move.
I think that's awesome, especially because I'm of a Vietnamese background, and I can now start thinking about some friends and family members and acquaintances that I'd like to bring over and show them a different side to the world or life, if you will, and see where it goes from there.
How well established is the Vietnamese community in Robinvale?
Oh, I think it's very well established. I think, as you can see, myself here, who's been here since 82, we come since the war, and we've kind of established ourselves in the city, but slowly migrated to the country. I find my calling here, and I'd like to share some of what I feel that I love about the country to those that I know. So, yeah.
Are there others from Vietnam that would feel the same way, that may already be doing horticulture work in the region and have family and friends in Vietnam, that would like to come and have that experience too?
Absolutely, absolutely. They're really waiting for this visa for a very long time. They are a proven workforce. They know the work that needs to be done, and yeah, I suppose it's I don't know what to say, but yeah, they were really wanting to be here.
How important do you think that first-hand experience is as a guest, from hearing from government officials about the work and the opportunities that are here? Are they going to get a more realistic story from people they know?
My first thought is that, firstly, Romvale has the opportunity to give these people a start, whether a start in Australia, a start a new life, or a start in education. But yeah, Romvale has a very good opportunity for a start. And I feel that these cohort that might want to come over, they would want to join the workforce, they would want to join the community, and yeah, just better themselves, I suppose, in an economical way, or in a knowledge base, or just something different maybe from what they used to.
Jack Dang is a Vietnamese migrant who now works in the Murray River community of Robinvale. He was speaking to Kelly Hollingworth. My name's Clint Jasper. My thanks to Serena Locke, Kath McAloon and Emma Hart for their help pulling the show together this week. Now it's time to hear from my wonderful Saturday morning colleagues about what's coming up right here on RN.